So we continue with the journey through which Sri Aurobindo is taking us. So far we have seen very logically the proposition which is to be validated by experience. So it's not just a theory or a hypothesis, though to the mind it appears like that, but something that has been validated by the experience of the rishis of yore, not only in India as well as outside, mystics all over, that there is a reality behind everything. It's very logical actually, but the question is of validating it. A reality which is absolute, the origin, the source, eternal, infinite, immutable, ineffable. Ineffable in the sense speech cannot express it. So there is a reality like that which is there, the supreme reality. And the mind cannot express it, the speech cannot express it, the mind cannot know it, because logical, mind is a subordinate movement. Though it's all pervading and all this that is nothing else but that reality, yet we cannot say of anything exclusively in particular that it is this. So this is the... But actually it's very simple. For example, courage is a quality. Sri Aurobindo gives that example. Courage is a quality of Brahman. All qualities come from that. Sagun Brahman, we heard about it. But we cannot say that courage is Brahman. We cannot say that. Similarly, we can say that Brahman, the healing capacity or the quality, comes from Brahman, because all qualities come from Brahman. But we, and that is what gives to a herb a healing property. But we cannot say that this herb is Brahman in that sense, that if I have the herb, I have Brahman. So it is totality, and it can be, if we take it simply intellectually, it has led to a lot of confusion in thought. That's why this jnana, Brahma jnana, was not given to anyone and everyone, because it is so subject to misuse. So we have the story which Sri Aurobindo also reminds us in The Life Divine and elsewhere in his letters, that a man who is going and he sees the elephant who is coming and he says, I am Brahman, elephant is Brahman, Brahman cannot harm Brahman. So then the Mahavat says that, please, I don't know this intellectual thing, but you know, you please get out of the way, otherwise you'll get hit. But he says, no, you don't have the real knowledge, I have the real knowledge. And sure enough, he is hit and he is thrown. And then he goes back and he tells his guru, why did you give me such a knowledge, and see where it has led me. And the guru reminds him that, then if all is Brahman, then why didn't you listen to the Mahavat Brahman? And there are many, many interesting stories like that. Somebody is praying to God that, help me, I am drowning because flood has come. And suddenly a man comes and says, come, we are here to help you. And he says, not you, God has to come to help me. So after some time, a boat comes and says, water is rising, he is climbing to the last level. He says, please come. He says, not you, God has to help me. And then he climbs right on top of the building because water is rising. And a swimmer takes all the risk that this is the priest, he will drown. So they respect him and love him, care for him. Please come. No, 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 God will come and help me. So he drowns. And he goes to God and says, why didn't you save me? He says, so many times I sent help for you in so many ways. So it's this knowledge has to be received by a mind which is subtle, plastic and wide. Otherwise it can be completely misused. For example, another example. So Ganga is in Ganga Sagar. Of course, Ganga is in Allahabad, Triveni Sangam. Ganga is in all the, you know, Varanasi, it is there in all the different places, Patna and many places through which we move. And Ganga is in Gomukh, Ganga is in Gangotri, then Gomukh. And Ganga is in the heart of Shiva, in the Kamandalu of Brahma. Ganga is also in the heart of Shiva, from where she has emerged. So now what happens is that if we want to go to the Ganga in her ultimate origin, So a person will probably reach some place, somewhere, and he'll realize, well, its origin is beyond this material frame. These are representative symbols of the original Ganga. So I want to go to original Ganga. So he meditates, and finally he reaches, by the grace of the Lord, into the heart of Vishnu. So what does he do after that? So that's where the problem came. He said, this is knowledge. I have found the source of Ganga. And it is so blissful, so beautiful. What is all that? Oh, that is an illusion. Now you see, that was the problem. So all else was declared as an illusion, whereas the saying is that the totality is also Brahman, the essence is Brahman, the source is Brahman, each object is by his fiat they exist. There will be no existence without that one existent. So this is where this was one extreme conclusion. This led to a kind of, again, because Brahman is beyond dualities, so it led to the kind of Vairagya. So Vairagya, mental Vairagya, moral Vairagya, and spiritual Vairagya. Mental Vairagya means that all our values of the mind, they don't hold good. Because that is above good and bad, above pleasure and pain, above success and failure. Then again, moral Vairagya, he is beyond right and wrong. So I can do anything I feel like. Moral Vairagya, spiritual Vairagya, that the very world is basically an illusion. So this is how, this is not there in ancient teaching. This is specifically post-Buddha and post-Shankaracharya who gave this version. But then the world strikes us at every moment, so what do you do with it? So Shankaracharya came up with a very nice way of understanding. He said, well, vyavarikta, vyavarik, meaning thereby, while you are still here, don't talk about that, seek it. But while you are here, follow the laws of this world. So it became like a practical reality, but not really an ultimate reality. It was an illusionism which was modified. And it is justified by the fact, you must first know the, you know, whole argument, by the fact that it is true that everything in this world is ephemeral, transient, temporary, temporal, nothing lasts. So the need for the permanent is so strong in human consciousness after a point of development that it says, why not I dwell in the permanent and the infinite and abandon this? Very clearly, big question mark remains. But why this? And how come? So Sri Aurobindo has right now, he's answering how. So the first argument is, can the immutable become mutable? Mutable means the world which is ever changing. He's immutable, he's the unchanging. How can he become this mutable? So that he describes. Then how can the infinite become finite? That is very easy. Logical answer, at least I used to feel logical. Is there something that God cannot do? Because people often raise this question, infinite, supreme is supreme. You say that Sri Aurobindo is supreme or the avatar of the supreme. How can supreme take a human body? How can the infinite take a finite body? So my argument used to be that, okay, so you mean there is something supreme cannot do. Now you see, it's a catch. It's a catch. Because the moment say, yes, he cannot do this. So the omnipotence of supreme is doubtful. He can do everything. He can become a smallest blade of grass. And he can be beyond all things. So infinite can become finite. Infinite who is beyond qualities. Can he become quality? As we have seen, he is the source of all qualities. Formless, can he become form? Yes, all the time in the world we see formless and form together, and it creates a lot of problem in human life. For example, you may have love in your heart, lot of love for someone, anyone, no one, but your heart may be full of love. But people understand when you express it through a message, through a gift. So what is this love? This is impersonal, universal love. And it expresses, it takes a form. The same love takes a form. And when it takes a form, it becomes cognizable to people. And that's why the mother says that, well, divine love is so powerful and in its origin so impersonal and vast that ordinary humanity, if it comes in contact with that, it will feel it is something cold. Because it cannot understand, it has to see human ways of responding. And if the human ways are missing, see how many letters of Dilip Kumar Roy to Sri Aurobindo, mother said this, and then he has to explain. Just imagine, guru of gurus, I think this is a singular parallel example in the entire spiritual history where a guru is trying to write a long letter to please his disciple, almost like saying, see, look here, you know, you basically misunderstood, mother didn't mean this, mother didn't say this. I feel, what a guru and what a disciple. He could have simply said, look here, if you misunderstand mother's intention, it's your problem. Some of us would have said, you don't understand my love, it's your problem. But he is explaining, this is not what mother said. See, this is what she has said. See, this is what she meant. So this is the problem between the finite and the infinite. Now comes the catch. Okay, it can become. But how does it become? What is the significance of form and name? So what is that? There has to be some power which turns the infinite into finite. This is logical. Some power has to intervene. Otherwise it cannot be automatic, magical. There is no such impossible magic. There is a logic behind it. And the logic is that the Brahman brings out of itself its own power. And that power is called as Maya. So now we have the entry of the grand, the ultimate actor or actress. He is the actor, she is the supreme actress. So he is then the moment she comes out, the one becomes two, then Brahman becomes the pure existent. He is the existence. And he holds within him all the countless possibilities. And she becomes the one who actually takes out these possibilities and manifests them. So this becomes the, and see how nature reproduces it everywhere in creation. If you look at it, the masculine and the feminine element, the feminine receives from the masculine a seed. That's it. But she holds it, contains it, develops it, delivers it, makes sure it grows. And after everything is over, the saddest part is when somebody says to the father, aapke jaisa hai. It's default. He gets the surname of the dad and he is appreciated. Aapke, aap par gaya hai. Kya hoga? Sara kaam. All things she has done. So that's where we have this idea, you know, because of this false psychology, we had the dichotomy between Brahman and Maya. But Maya is the power of Brahman, nothing else. So that's what we are going to read, some mystery and magic of Maya. So first, what are forms and what are names? We'll come to the Maya and how she operates. He is going to reveal all the secrets to us. Forms, this is page 352, somewhere in the middle. Forms are manifestations. So what is manifestation? They are at once symbol and representative. I write a name, or let's say a sentence. What is it? It is manifestation of something which I want to communicate. All language, all letters are manifestations. They are expressions manifesting some truth of which is inside me. If you know the language, you will understand what is going inside me. Though very often, unfortunately, the same language which is meant to bridge becomes a barrier. So, because we misunderstand, misinterpret. So forms are manifestation. But always, the person will be greater than what is expressed or manifested. See, all these things lead to certain logical, practical implications. If you don't understand somebody's words or deeds, tune into his silence. And if you understand the silence, you will understand the words much better. This is the secret. So, always, because the person will always be greater than his acts, will be always greater than what he expresses. But that expression is his expression. So that's what is the Maya. Forms are manifestation, not arbitrary interventions out of nothing. This idea that Maya came and she started imagining wildly things, she started chaotically creating this or that. No. They are manifestation. Manifestation follows a process. There is a process in it. It's not just an arbitrary something. For line and color, mass and design, which are the essentials of form, carry always in them a significance. Or, it might be said, secret values and significances of an unseen reality made visible. Very simple, we can see. Look at the, we can start much earlier, but animal or the fishes, jalatattva, then you know, you see the whole evolution. Then animal, then the snake, the serpent, going with a swift speed. What comes after serpent? The king of serpent begins to raise his head. It's as if, you know, if you look at it very impersonally without fear, it's an aircraft trying to take off. Some of these serpents can actually, right? It can be taller than man. And then what happens after the serpent? As if there is a consciousness trying to break free. The speed, sheer speed and swiftness and trying to lift itself, it enters into a bird. And birds represent the soul of the animal world, just as flowers represent the soul of the vegetable world. So love for flowers, love for worlds is a sign that, you know, we somewhere have, you see the way the day we look at these birds, the way they are. Swan is regarded as a symbol also. Then of course, we again see in the animal, the quadruped looks to the two sides. And it can turn its head little bit like this and that. Can it turn upward? It cannot turn upward. It doesn't have the mechanism. Man stands erect, straight. He can turn his head upward and look at the sky, though please don't practice it, it's dangerous. I myself almost fallen. Nowadays, of course, people look below on the cell phone, which is more dangerous. So this is how, if you look up and walk, maybe somebody will ask you to see a doctor. If you look down and walk, the doctor, you will reach the hospital. So you don't have to see a doctor. But the point is that, see, forms are so symbolic. The human form is made in such a way that all the elements are arranged right from top to bottom. This is just an example. And it is made in the image of the Purusha, not this Purusha as we understand. Sa Purusha Evascha. So in the Purushukta, when it described that how creation comes, so that great being, so it says, Padabhyam Prithvi. So the feet are, he's described just like a human being. So his feet are rested on the ground. So, you know, all the head, and Shubhendra describes this also in Savitri. And from head to this thing, and thus fourfold social order emerged from there. Knowledge, this is the highest. Dynamism coming from the heart and lungs, strength, power, force. Then all the things which are in the belly and the underbelly, all that attracts the reproduction, the production, all this belongs to the belly. And the feet, which must be on the ground. So we see the fourfold order came from there. So in human being, the very construction, there is a symbol behind it. And often I use this, that see, human beings are not meant to look backwards. Because you can't walk looking backwards. There will be things behind. But we are made to look forward. Looking backward is dangerous. So you have to move forward. But some people keep looking backward. They hold a grudge. So, you know, man is not supposed to do that. He is supposed to keep moving forward. So everything in man, again, two eyes. Of course, two ears. One, you can put the mobile and look, listen to the word. The other should tune into the ether. So see, everything in creation is a symbol. But we don't see it like that. So every line, form, even the human body, mother speaks about it. And two examples with which we'll proceed further. Sri Ramakrishna would often select the disciple, initiate him, after he would physically see him, almost examine him, the form. And then he would say, okay, he can come in. Sure, Aurobindo, he used to ask for a photograph. And the photograph will come. Sometimes he would say, the forehead shows this, the lip show this, the chin shows this. And he would say that maybe he can come in and try. So the forms are like that, but we don't understand. So we just look at only as a kind of, you know, whatever. That's. But forms are manifestation. They always in them a significance. Or it might be said, secret values and significances of an unseen reality made visible. It is for that reason that figure, line, hue, mass, composition can embody what would be otherwise unseen, can convey what would be otherwise occult to the sense. That's why sun is the symbol of the supermind. And in ancient things, people used to meditate. Even Sri Aurobindo, before the mother's physical coming, he has said this in evening talks you can find. Someone says, can I meditate on the image of the sun? He says, yes, you can do that. Precisely because sun is the symbol of the creator. He's looking everywhere. He is the all-powerful. He is the non-doer and he is the sole doer. Everything has emerged from him. All the planets. This is a known thing. And everything is centered around him. Everything is moving in a circumference around him. So see, so symbolically one can look at it and then that's how you can pray. Reverse, water is a symbol of life. So all these panch tattva and everything, so forms, line, hue, mass, composition. What about name? This we all know that in mystic things, sometimes Sri Aurobindo also, sometimes he would change the name. Sometimes he would not change the name. Keep it just as it is. Both things is done. So Champak Lal ji is Champak. He continues with his name. But K.D. Setna becomes Amal Kiran. Now, it's very interesting. So, there has to be some meaning in names. Why should one change the name? There has to be something. Of course, there are occult names, like Nalini Das occult name, Satyugi, Satyogi. So, there are different name also has a reality. Normally, we say, Naam Roop mein kya rakha hai? So, here he says, name, in its deeper sense, is not the word by which we describe the object, but the total of power, quality, character of the reality which a form of things embodies and which we try to sum up by a designating sound, a knowable name, nomen, numen, in that sense we might say is numen. The secret names of the gods are their power, quality, character of being caught up by the consciousness and made conceivable. So this, after this, we'll stop saying what's in a name. Doesn't matter. Keep whatever it means. It's only a way to express. And then further shorten it. They do for everybody. But my name, they had shortened in a very... My surname people had shortened in the college. That time I didn't understand the significance. So Pandey was turned into Pondy. I didn't know. This is so real. All through I never understood its meaning. But Alok I use very wisely. When somebody asks, how are you? I said, my name is all okay. So all okay. It doesn't matter. So this is the... So name itself, that's why in India, giving name was so important a ceremony. See, Krishna is given a name by Gargarishi. And what is the name he gives? Krishna. Now, Krishna means one who attracts, the supreme power of attraction. Akarshan, Vikarshan, Krishna, Sankarshan. So, that power which attracts, Balaram. So, names, Bajrang, Vajrang, so, and many other names. Arjun, so many names Shri Krishna uses for Arjun. Oh, fair one, Kaunte, Bharata. And then one of the name which is Gudakesh. One who has conquered. Yet conquered is sleep. So all these names represent a quality. And it should be like that. Because then, you know, they vibrate and reverberate. So he says there is a meaning in all this. They are not just casual things. And even when we distort, nowadays we keep any kind, doesn't matter, that reality will be there. And it will express itself. So everything has a particular name. And everything represents a certain quality. So we use the word gold standard. So what is it that gold represents? Diamond. So all these things have a certain quality. So now we come to, okay, we understand. And then other is also that how can the one become many? It's because we think one is a unit. See, there are religions which have made this mistake. So what is the mistake? There is one God. But next is my God. You have to call him as Allah. Okay, there is one God, but you are turning him into a unit. So what cannot become many? Because if that's how we look at it, then to become many, it has to add itself. 1 + 1 becomes 2. 1 + 1 + 1 becomes 3. But can the divine be divided? Can the one be divided? No, he is indivisible. So the question is how the indivisible can become many, because he is one as well as infinite. So he is not one as a unit that he is sitting somewhere above some person with a carrot and rod in his hand. Obviously that conception is an anthropomorphic conception. But the one holds within itself infinity. Therefore he can become many, and he can become many, many, many times over, and yet he will remain one. So that's the mathematics we read yesterday. The out of the whole comes out the whole. And mother tells a very beautiful story. I think it is mother's own story. I feel so that someone asked, someone who had returned from India, and the person was asked by the group, "Oh, in India, oh, do they count souls?" Mockingly. "Do they count souls? Do they have a census of souls?" And the person said, "Yes." Said, "How many? How many are there?" And mother says, she stretched out her hand and said, "One." One. They count the souls, but there is one. So we have the story where somebody went to Vrindavan and this lady was told, I think it is Mirabai, but I may be mistaken, that no, Guruji sees only, he doesn't see women. He sees only men. So he says, "Oh, is it news? I thought there is one Purush only and all others are women. So there are some other Purush other than him?" So there are stories which are very interesting, which reveal this truth, which in pure Advaita Vedanta is missed. These stories come in the Puranic legends. That's why they are an indispensable supplement. So one can become many. Now comes this question of Maya. Okay, Maya is the one who is doing this trick, magic. So how is she doing it? There has to be again a process. There must be certain powers inherent in Maya. To be able to do all this, to create finite out of infinite, to create many out of one, to create name, form, there has to be some power. So that power, now Shivindra describes on page 356. As with the being of Brahman, so with its consciousness. So Brahman, the moment that one reality becomes two, so there is existence and there is consciousness. Consciousness is what we, or consciousness force is what we call as Maya. Maya, it is not bound to a finite restriction. So with its consciousness, Maya is not bound to a finite restriction of itself or to one state or law of its action. It can be many things simultaneously, just like Brahman. It is after all his power. So how can it be many things? So Shivindu describes, simultaneously have many coordinated movements, which to the finite reason may seem contradictory. It is one but innumerable, manifold, infinitely plastic, inexhaustibly adaptable. Very simple to see this. Do we, sometimes we see one aspect in a human being. Someone else sees in the same human being some other aspect. And sometimes we experience not just alternatively one state or the another, but simultaneously different states. One state which is kind of caught in the lower nature and its movement, other state which is simultaneously seeking for freedom, a third state which experiences the freedom. All these together. So this is one capacity of Maya, which we all can experience it. The more we develop, we can see this. And this is so important in yoga, in the practice of yoga. It can put forth many states of consciousness at a time, many dispositions of its force, without ceasing to be the same consciousness force forever. That's what we see again in stories, where Lord Rama goes and he is, of course, Kabir Das has put it this way, Ek Ram Dashrath ka beta, Ek Ram hai Jagat Pasara, Ek Ram hai Ghat Ghat Vasi, Ek Ram hai Sab ka Nyara. But people do the same mistake. The conventional interpretation is that, well, you know, people worship this Ram and all, but actually that is not the true Ram. True Ram is Sab se Nyara. But actually the saying is so simple, Ek, it is the one Ram. Who is Sabse Nyara? The same Ram, one Ram, has spread himself into the world, universal consciousness. The same one Ram dwells in each element of creation, and the same one Ram is born as the son of Dashrath. That completes it. So we always disjointedly take it that, well, it is saying that don't have to worship Ram because Ram is only a human being. But real Ram that yogis worshipped, they are all one. And Maya can do this. Ram himself experiences that. Shri Krishna, you see, on one side, his actions are, as if like a person who is going through certain issues, difficulties, challenges. But suddenly on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Shri Krishna reveals his ultimate transcendent form. It's the same Krishna who is the son of Devaki, the same Krishna who is the divine incarnate, the same Krishna who is standing on the as the charioteer on the battlefield, all of them together, this Maya can achieve. The problem is, this is Vidyamayi Maya. One step further, we forget this totality. That's why one of the things that never remind, keep saying, I am a sinner, I am a horrible person. People will say, let them say it, their prerogative, their joy, their problem. But don't take it, public opinion. Say, I am Brahman. Say, I am divine. This is the saying. Because if we keep on repeating, and we should not say to others also this way, that you are bad, you are horrible. And in psychology now we call it as negative role playing. So the difference between Vidyamayi and Avidyamayi Maya is that Vidyamayi Maya has the entire knowledge of all these. That's what is the avatar. He comes out with his yog maya, pressing upon his own maya, he takes a human body. Prakritim swama adhisthaya. Standing upon the maya, he presses it and takes a body. That's what Shobindo writes in A God's Labor. Coercing my godhead, I have come down. But the ordinary human being forgets. He knows only I am this little struggling creature. And in yoga, we have to disengage from that. I am not this fellow who is rolling in the mud. I am that. So this is the one of the practices which comes from this capacity of Maya. But first avidya, why it is there, he'll explain later. So we need not go into it. But then simultaneously we can experience many states. So this is what he is saying. Without ceasing to be the same consciousness force, it is at once transcendental, universal and individual. It is the supreme supra-cosmic being that is aware of itself as all being, as the cosmic self, as the consciousness force of cosmic nature, and at the same time experiences itself as the individual being and consciousness in all existences. That is what is important about the great vision of Shri Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Nowhere we find this supreme description of transcendent, universal, individual, all together in one single narration. That's the beauty. And it escapes on all sides. Now I'm feeling tempted to get into that, but let's. And as I said, we can, as human beings, experience something of it. simultaneously there are two or three different aspects, states of consciousness, but we get tied to one. But we can experience them simultaneously. This, as we develop in the scale of evolution, this happens naturally. The animal, the human and the gods, all three simultaneously one can experience. So this is, he speaks about the first possibility of Maya, is that it can simultaneously become many states of consciousness. What is the second power? A second possibility of the infinite consciousness that must be admitted is its power of self-limitation or secondary self-formation into a subordinate movement within the integral, illimitable consciousness and knowledge, for that is a necessary consequence of the power of self-determination of the infinite. Classic example, or the best example, is mother. When she is talking to children, look at it, simultaneously she is telling a child in the language of the child, but she is revealing the highest truth simultaneously through that language. Only she could do it, because she is the ultimate divine shakti who becomes Maya. But we can also experience in our own life that when a father has to, let's say, teach cricket to his child, so what will he do? He will not say, okay, you start batting, 5 year old, and I'll bowl, and bowl at full pace. He'll not do that. He'll bowl at the pace that the child can take it. Or if he is playing chess, he'll come to the level of the child and play, not come down, but come to the child's level and play. Why is he doing it? Slowly he will raise the game level till the child becomes ready and capable and goes beyond. This is exactly what Maya can do. She limits herself, delimitation. So in every form and name she limits herself. And as I said, if she reveals the total truth to every form, there will be no creation. Suddenly the snake will say, oh, my place is in Shiva's, round his neck, I'll go. Snakes are gone. Rats, plenty. Then rats will say, my place is with Ganesha. Rats will also go. So slowly we'll see every creature will vanish. So she fixes till we are ready to discover that no, I am not just this, but I am something much greater. That is the story of Hanuman, that he is made to forget who he is. And when the time comes, then suddenly, Jamavant ke vachan sohai, so suddenly he remembers, oh, I am this. And he is ready for the work. So this is what is the whole second possibility of the infinite consciousness, is its, is that must be admitted, power of self-limitation. And it can limit itself to that extent. Spiritual individuality, that's how it becomes an individual. Spiritual individuality means that each individual self or spirit is a center of self-vision and all vision. So that's how she becomes the spiritual individual. In the Gita, it is said in the passing, para prakriti jiva bhuta. So she becomes the jiva. It is the divine mother who has become us. That's why the psychic being loves the mother. Spontaneously recognizes. Mind cannot. Because it is a portion of her. And it automatically feels love as a mother, as a child to the mother. So this is spiritual individuality. So Maya, what does it do? It creates these spiritual individuals who are real, but they become a center from which they are seeing the totality. That's how the play can take place. After the play or before the play, they are all having a cup of tea, like players. We are crying that, oh, India lost the game. But they are saying, okay, let's party together. The opponent, everybody, they are all cricketers, having fun. So there is in the play, this spiritual individuality has to express something of the infinite through the Swabhava and the Swadharma. So we must fulfill our role, not somebody else's role. That person has to do their role. What is our role? We have to discover the Swabhava and the Swadharma, and then we have to do it till we reach a point where Sarvadharman Parityajya. So this is where it talks about spiritual individuality. So where does Avidyamai Maya come in? When we think I am the ego. I am my papa's son, I am a surname, I am this job, I am this profession, I am this degree. Now Avidya Mayi is operating. And she has to operate it first. Till we are ready to discover, I am Mamaye Vansh. I am a child of the Divine Mother. So this is the way it works. So this is how she creates many out of the one. So we'll just skip. And this spiritual individuality, which can be realized by the grace of the, I'm using now that language, of the Divine Mother as the Vidyamai Maya, when we are ready, then this spiritual individuality can become universal because it's connected. That's how, from the universal, she has created the spiritual individual. As an individual ego, try however hard. It's not possible because again the Maya, the Avidyamai Maya. You may say we are all one human being, let's say a party, and then we'll fight. That's what, you know, when World Union was formed, Mother said, they want to have unite the world. And there are only three people, but they are fighting with each other. It cannot be done on the basis of the ego. But on the basis of the spiritual individual, the psychic being, it can be realized because it becomes universal. So this is the second power of Maya. So page 358, third power. But a third power or possibility of the infinite consciousness can be admitted. So what is this third power? It's power of self-absorption, of plunging into itself, into a state in which self-awareness exists, but not as knowledge, in pure self-awareness and knowledge, and the inner consciousness itself would be lost in pure being. So that is the super consciousness. So it can absorb completely. And again, we can take an example. A person who is sitting in, absorbed in deep meditation. So he is oblivious of things which are happening. And it can go to an extent that, and it's known that if it can carry on for a long time, they say 21 days, then you can cut the body, burn it, and one won't come to know because the whole consciousness is absorbed in samadhi. But this too is only one of the operations of Maya. It's not the entire truth. So we can take a more human example. So more human example is that one is right now, you know, for example, one is reading the Life Divine or something. Now fully the whole focus is there. The whole consciousness is absorbed as it were in Shobindo's The Life Divine. So does it mean that if something suddenly happens to the body, I won't know? I'll know. There is a kind of vague awareness, but it is absorbed. Suddenly you'll come back. That's what happens when people are absorbed in thought. So you're walking and somebody passes by and says, Namaste, hello, and you don't get to know. And he may think you are arrogant, but no, you are simply absorbed. But if there is somebody who can nudge you, you say, oh, okay, I'm sorry. So this capacity of self-absorption exist at both the poles. It can absorb itself completely into the state of superconscience. And it can absorb itself completely into a state of total self-oblivion. And that's what inconscience is. So it can either absorb into superconscience or it can completely absorb into the inconscience. So two people can do very well meditation. One were really able to detached from all this and get totally absorbed. Not that this is what is advisable or those who can really have a very good tamasic after a heavy meal, sleepy person. You sit. 2 hours will pass. You won't get to know. And you'll come out fresh. Ah, what a nice meditation I had. Others will say you were snoring. No. I was not snoring. You just, you know, I was conscious in my stomach. So this is a capacity of Maya that it can either absorb itself into superconscience or the inconscience. That's how inconscience is created. Meaning thereby the whole of infinity is there in the inconscience with all its qualities and powers but held back. We do the same thing consciously when we hold back. Supposing there is a word called hold your horses. You don't, you want to say something but you hold back. So Maya has this capacity to hold things back, to absorb completely, and that's what is superconscience. This self-absorption, this trance of infinity is again no longer luminously but darkly. So there is one is the superconscient, but the other is the state which we call the inconscient. So that's why from the inconscient everything emerges. Now we understand what is the magician's hat. It's superconscient which is hidden in it. Who did it? Maya. That's what we see in that great story of the bride of Brahman. She hides herself and she brings Brahman, because Brahman suddenly realizes, without my Shakti I am Jada, I am nothing, I must find her. So he calls the gods. Gods say, what has happened to you? You seem to be powerless. He says, yes, my power has gone and I can't know where she is hiding. So all the gods say, they try. Varun says, she is hiding right in the darkness depths. I can see a darkness and I know she is hiding there. So who will pull her out? Som goes, Ananda. He says, I'll call her. He holds her hand and starts bringing her out. She won't come. All the gods try. But when Ananda goes, Ananda is her child. And Ananda in creation makes us live. She pulls her out. He pulls her out. Then, but she has to move further. Otherwise she can be happy with the Ananda. Then Agni comes. Agni says, I'll carry you further. So you see how then Vayu comes. That's the whole journey of evolution. So it is the divine consciousness which has involved itself and hidden in the inconscient. And step by step, she is being recovered. How beautiful this whole thing is. So it can become completely its opposite. There, it can also absorb in one or the other aspects of the divine, supreme. There can then be a fundamental double status, such as that of the Nirgun, standing back from the Sagun and absorbed in its own purity and immobility. So people who, see, that's the problem of an exclusive meditation. So people who touch it, they say Sagun Brahm is the only real. Nirgun Brahm is the only reality. Formlessness is the only reality. Because this is the trick of Maya. They are also tricked by Maya. And others will say, no. Sagun Brahm is the reality. That is also a trick of Maya. Because this is how she operates. She can do this. And each thinks they are free from Maya. That's why Shri Krishna says, it's my Maya. You cannot get across it. Shobindo says it very beautifully. He says, it is the Lord's Maya. You cannot slay Maya. She will pursue you right up to the supreme trance. Is there. So what are we expected to do? He says, you cannot slay Maya. You can slay Moha. Moha is the false attachment, the delusional relationship that you should remove. But if you do away with form and name, this too is Maya. That's why the Shruti says, those who abandon birth, go into non-birth, that will never come again, they are also under the spell of Maya, in a spell of darkness. And they who dedicate themselves to birth alone, they too are under the spell of Maya into darkness. And then it gives a very interesting, so what are we supposed to do? Sambhuti, asambhuti. So, vidyancha, vidyancha, yast dvedo bhayam saha. Avidyan chamrityum tirtva, vidyan chamritam ashnute. You have to hold them together. While you are playing this role, Ram has to play the role, Arjun has to play the role, Duryodhan also has to play the role. He says, I am bound by your Maya. I know what is dharma, but I have no pravarti for it. I know what is adharma, I have no nivrati from it. He is also playing a role, except that he is in avidya. Play the role well, sincerely. But always remember that I am not just this. Then one joins the two. That's the way to live. That's what Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us through this gospel of Maya. So all these are the operations of Maya. And we'll take a pause here. And then we'll come to the other enigma term that we encounter, and that is Purusha and Prakriti. So Brahman and Maya is now clear. So to me at least. Okay. So we'll come back after 7-8 minutes. Thank you.